This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
5 seconds to go. Mike Hoffman better hurry. His block pass is stopped by Lowry. Shot by the captain in Wheeler. Goes wide of the mark. The horn sounds to end the hockey game. And the Winnipeg Jets come in and now have won their third straight on the road. They open up this four-game road trip with a very hard-fought 4-3 victory over the Florida Panthers here tonight in Sunrise, South Florida. The final score, the Winnipeg Jets 4, the Florida Panthers 3.
From Thursday night in Sunrise, Florida, our buddy Paul Edmonds with the call. The Jets get their four-game road trip off to a good start by defeating the Panthers by that 4-3 margin. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show alongside Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg. I'm your host, Drew Mindell. We have 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning. We're all over the Winnipeg Jets, looking at the team through the 20-game mark of the season, and of course getting you ready for this afternoon's contest in Tampa Bay, where the Jets will face the Tampa Bay Lightning. Gentlemen, good to see you both on this Saturday morning. Let's get started.
Likewise.
Oh, thank you. It's nice that you back my play on that one. Let's get started by looking at the Jets, looking back at the week that was for the Jets, and then looking at the 20 games of the Winnipeg Jets season thus far. They sit here today on the 16th of November, 11-8-1. Mm-hmm. In a playoff spot right now.
I just can't believe it's the 16th of November. Like, where did this month go?
Oh, I can't believe that they played 20 games.
Yeah. I said that the other day. I was actually shocked that it's already reached the 20-game mark.
Yeah.
It feels like the season just began.
I feel like November's always a fast month.
I don't know. It just, like I said, I remember I was doing the pregame report, and I was like, how is this already game 20? Like, that just kind of snuck up.
Mm-hmm. And the Jets have won 11 of their 20 games.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd say the asterisk next to that is that the majority of those wins have come either in overtime or in the shootout. But
aren't those wins?
A win is a win. I mean, it won't help them necessarily in playoff tiebreakers if it gets to that point. But a win is a win. And
what was the first overtime win? The Devils game, right?
Devils game, the second game of the season when they came back from 4-0 down to take that 5-4 victory in New Jersey. And you look at what they've done so far with the roster changes, the defense being in flux, the litany of injuries, and there's certainly been times and there's certainly been games where you would say this hasn't been very impressive and they haven't looked like a playoff team, quote-unquote, is supposed to look. But after 20 games, I think most people would have to say record-wise, not performance-wise necessarily, but record-wise, they're probably pretty pleased where the Jets are right now.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And you know, at the beginning of the season, it was all about Dustin Byfuglien not being in the lineup, and then it turned into all of the injuries on defense, and then you started to have more injuries at forward, right? I mean, Brian Little, Mason Appleton being the two big players that are out of the lineup right now. Obviously, Buff is out of the lineup, but I guess we won't include him because he hasn't been in the lineup the whole year. But I feel like the last five games have been a microcosm of really the whole year, the first 20 games, the first quarter of the season, right? And, you know, I mentioned the Devils earlier game, but that Devils game that we talked about last Saturday, and obviously the game against Vancouver was the game that was before we came on air, but
the Devils game was about 10 days ago, 12 days ago on the Tuesday,
right?
And that was a terrible hockey game.
And in the last five games, they've won three and lost two, and to me, that's kind of the way the season has gone, right? I mean, they're just above 500. They've won 11 games, as you mentioned. They've gotten points in 12 of 20. But right now, guys, that's good enough to have them in a playoff spot. And I realize that, you know, the Jets have played, you know, a couple more games than some of the other teams in the division, Dave. But I mean, I agree with you, Drew. You know, at this point in the season, I think you're happy that you're in a playoff spot. And to be frank with you, I mean, even though I'm Ezra,
the worst part was in my head, I was thinking that as you said that, I'm like, I won't interrupt him, but I'm thinking that. But go on.
No, I mean, this is exactly where I thought the Jets would be. I mean, I picked them to be a playoff team. I realized there were a lot of people that looked at the right side of the Jets defense and they said, oh, you know, I don't think the Jets are going to be a playoff team this year. At the very, you know, best, I think people were saying that the Jets were going to be competing for maybe, you know, second or third in the Central. Not many people had the Jets winning the Central, but, you know, you look at the teams at the top right now, Colorado, Nashville, St. Louis, the top of the Central, of course.
the Jets actually ahead of Nashville. The Predators have two games in hand. Well, but to your point, the Predators on a per game basis are performing better than
that's
the Jets.
Yeah, and that's why those. My point was those were the teams that I thought would be battling for first. St. Louis, Nashville, Colorado. Obviously, Dallas has started to turn it around, Dave. And you know they're a team that I didn't really see as an upper echelon central team. Some people did, but the point is, you're in a playoff spot right now at the 20 game mark, so you're happy about that. And
You're happy about that because I think if you looked at most of the play on the ice, I think the record sort of flatters their play on the ice, which is a good problem to have. And to Dave's point before, you totally get credit for all the wins you get, no matter how you get them. There's still points in the bank and there are points in your win column. Mm-hmm. But if you would have said to most people, watch the Jets games. You know, you don't know the outcome. Well, watch the games. You don't know the outcome. What would you think this team's record would be? I think most people would say it would be worse than 11-8-1. And for that reason, they do get credit for the record they have, despite not necessarily playing at that level.
Yeah, and I think most people who watch the games regularly can attribute that to one person, Connor Vezinabuck, because to me, the guy's been the difference on this team,
no
and
question.
he's been that next level that. You know, he had to be, and we talked about it in the preseason, and we talked about how he's got to have a return to form in order for this Jets team, knowing the deficiencies they had on the back end, knowing that the forwards were really going to have to maybe, you know, again, this is a team that has, it's their goal differential right now is at a -6.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not something we're really used to seeing with this Jets team, because scoring goals, as he made this point last week, this has not been an issue with this team, his scoring goals. So when you have a Jets team that isn't scoring as much because they're not cheating as often, perhaps, because maybe they're being a little more conscientious about their defense. So you don't have that, but you're going to need someone to step up. And really, the difference to my mind and to most people who are watching these games is Connor Hellebuck.
Well, the Thursday game in Florida, I mean, that's a game where the Jets get 4 goals, which is something that they haven't often got, you know, this season. Yeah. And I think more important than those 4 goals is they're all 5-on-5 goals.
Mm-hmm.
So an area in particular where the Jets have struggled. Those 4 goals aren't boosted up by the power play. The Jets didn't even have a power play opportunity during that game.
Right.
Second time that's happened this season already, the other time being the game in Pittsburgh that they won.
Mm-hmm.
So you get 4 goals against Florida, and the Panthers are, you know, they're not a great hockey team by any stretch. They're, you know, very much also sort of a middling hockey team, but well, they've been playing some good hockey.
They're not getting a Vezinabuck performance from
Bobrovsky. Not a $10 million performance, certainly. And, you know, a couple of those goals Bobrovsky probably doesn't love, but that's okay. Again, that's not something for the Jets to apologize for. But you go into Florida. You know, you're a team that is scratching and clawing for every win and every point you can get, and you get a clean 2 points on the road while scoring 5-on-5 goals and giving up 3 in your own zone. But at the same time, you know, it was one of those was power play, so you give up 2 goals at 5-on-5 from the Jets' perspective. I think Paul Maurice has to look at that game on Thursday night and say, this is sort of how I want our game to look for the next 60-plus games. There was a lot to like about Thursday's game against the Panthers, particularly at 5-on-5.
Well, especially coming off of that really disheartening loss to the Avalanche where they threw, you know, 40 pucks on Werner, right? So, I mean, the game against the Avalanche, I thought that the score really wasn't indicative of the way the Jets played. I thought, you know, they did a lot of good things, as they say, right? But, you know, I would disagree a little bit. This Panthers team is really good, and heading into that game, they were on a bit of a streak.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think the Panthers are necessarily, I'm not prepared to say they're a Stanley Cup contender, Drew, but this is definitely a team, at the very least, that I thought would be a playoff team, and I think they still are.
9-5-5. They're third in the Atlantic right now.
Right, so they're still in a playoff spot. So I just really liked about that game, if we're going to focus on that game here for a sec, is that was just, and Craig Button actually used this word, a good friend of the show on TSN, he said that was just a gritty effort.
Mm-hmm.
And it really was. I mean, that's the type of win. I mean, the first period, the Jets were not good.
No.
Two
shots on goal in the first period.
Yeah, a couple shots on goal, and they just weren't very good. But, you know, Lauren Brossoit kept the Jets in it. And obviously, I love that Josh Morrissey first goal. For some reason, I've always liked that low shot from a defenseman, you know, just a good shot. And I agree, maybe Bobrovsky would like to have that one back. But
I thought it was the Ehlers goal that Bobrovsky probably really wanted back, the one where Ehlers sort of, you know, puts it through him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it wasn't that. I mean, it was a good shot. It wasn't. I don't think.
Nice pass, though.
It was a very nice pass, but I don't think Ehlers got everything he wanted on the shot. I thought that it would sort of. You know, I think more often than not, Bobrovsky makes that save and certainly wants to make that save.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And Dave, I think probably what you like the best. You know, Drew mentions, you know, all 4 goals are at 5-on-5. I think what you like the most about that win is that Scheifele, Laine, and Connor were really good, mm-hmm. right? And mm-hmm. you've got three more games coming up on this road trip, and you've got a tough month of November really left here. When you talk about, you know, the other road games, you've got, you know, San Jose, and then you've got the vaunted, you know, back-to-back with the Ducks and Kings. And even though the Ducks and Kings aren't exactly lighting it up, I mean, you know, it's tough to go in there and get all 4 points, right? So I think you like the fact that Laine, Scheifele, and Connor are starting to get the results, because when you're talking about the game this afternoon against Tampa Bay, I mean, you're going to need your top line most likely, because the Lightning have finally woken up after a pretty slow start. Yes, they're still
nine goals on Thursday night the Lightning scored against the New York Rangers.
Right, and obviously they're not expecting to score nine goals the way Hellebuck is playing, but the point is Scheifele, Connor, Wheeler, Scheifele, Connor, Laine, they know that they have to be at the top of their game, because obviously, you know, Blake Wheeler moving to center, we've talked a lot about it the last couple of weeks. That's a big switch, but I thought that first line was what we expect on a nightly basis from that top line. Not saying that they were bad against Colorado, but just saying that, you know, they obviously didn't get the results.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290 as part of Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day. The Jets and the Lightning coming up at 3 o'clock this afternoon on the station. We're talking about the Jets at the 20 game mark of the season. We're going to be giving our player evaluations throughout the course of the program as well. We want to hear from you. Send us your tweets to at Illegal Curve. That you can, we want to hear what you have to think about the Jets at the 20 game mark. You can also send us your text to 1290 90. Standard messaging rates do apply on that. You know, Dave, you know, so looking at Thursday's game, you know, you look back at Tuesday's game against Colorado, which, to Ezzy's point, wasn't the result the Jets wanted, and it mm-hmm. certainly left a little bit to be desired, especially in that third period. But I look at this team and I think that they're beginning maybe to get comfortable in the system that Paul Maurice wants them to play. Mm-hmm. I think it's been a bit of a feeling out process for the first 20 games in terms of how do you play in your own zone and then transition that to be effective at 5-on-5. And I see glimpses mm-hmm. of them beginning to figure it out, that it starts in their own zone, and then, you know, the 5-on-5 part of the game isn't just a complete wasteland. They're able to then transition to be an offensive team while still being defensively responsible.
Yeah, I mean, I think, to your point, Drew, you're sitting there at the 20-game mark, and you're looking at the Jets team, and you're saying, okay, well, you've banked 23 points,
mm-hmm.
and you're in a position right now, you're in a playoff position, and you know, have you had the Lightning, you know, a lights-out season that you know, the St. Louis Blues 29 points? No, not yet, but, like, the reality is you've done a little bit more than tread water, and I think, to your point, like, if they can continue to maintain this and then slowly start to show, you know, I mean, again, the problem for them and what people are, you know, there's a lot of talk out is what happens when Connor Hellebuck comes back down to earth. Now, you know, we've seen a pretty good sample of what Connor Hellebuck's been able to do over the course of this season. And Lauren Brossoit actually had a pretty good game as well mm-hmm. in Florida the other night, which is important for them because, you know, they need him to be taking part of the load off of Connor Hellebuck, because that's one thing we talked about at the beginning of the season, was you don't want to burn out your top goaltender, and you have a reasonably good backup. Hasn't been the best year for Brossoit to start,
yeah.
but that was obviously a very good game for him on Thursday night. And I think, to your point, that you have a Jets team that does appear to be getting it a little bit more. And the one thing I think is, you know, we talk about this, is like allowing a little bit of consistency, allowing these lines to form that chemistry,
mm-hmm.
not breaking them up, not breaking out the line blender if you're not having success right away. Allow these guys to kind of get that opportunity to play together. You know, Scheifele and Laine are clearly a good duo, and you can put Ehlers there. You can put Connor there. You've got Kopp and Lowry. That's a good duo. Matthew Perreault, I think, has been playing pretty well of late. Like, I think Matthew Perreault, he's not getting the points, so people kind of forget about Matthew Perreault.
Yeah, he's due for a goal.
But that Kopp, Lowry, and Perreault line certainly isn't a line that the Jets have to worry about. That's an effective line.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I think, like, to me, but it's funny because, like, you know, if Matthew Perreault doesn't get points, if you just look at the box score, you say, okay, well, Matt, what's he doing for that kind of salary?
Mm-hmm.
But it's interesting, and we talked about it. I think it was, I don't remember which game it was, but Perreault is so aggressive on the forecheck sometimes that he, like, created the chaos. Now, he didn't get an assist on the eventual Jets goal, but if not for what Matthew Perreault does, Jets don't get the puck and then don't eventually score. So you're getting a lot of good performances. And again, I think, to your point, Drew, that you're getting these, you know, Roslick looks like he's getting more comfortable with Wheeler and Ehlers right now. So, mm-hmm. so I think that if this team can kind of maintain this and he doesn't break it all up, then maybe they'll start to get it and keep it turned around.
And to your point, then maybe if you're playing better hockey at 5-on-5 in all zones, mm-hmm. you're more comfortable with if Connor Hellebuyck takes a bit of a step back, or if isn't as otherworldly as he's been so far this year, other players on your team can pick up the slack, that's what maybe the Jets are going to see going forward. When we come back, we're going to start our evaluation of the Winnipeg Jets forwards. We're going to go player by player and decide and evaluate if those players are meeting our expectations, if they're below our expectations, or if they're exceeding our expectations. We're focused on the Jets at the 20-game mark. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN 1290.ca.
Here's in the corner, back for Little. Blasen. Little knocked it loose. Blasenick takes it around the net. Blasenick being watched there by Burns, twisting away. Centers! Score! Nikolaj Ehlers with a 1:24 left in the third period on some hard work by Little and Blasenick has given the Jets the lead.
From earlier this year, the Jets' victory in San Jose, a win the Jets didn't really have any reason to pull off, but they did nonetheless. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day. The Jets and the Lightning later on this afternoon. Complete coverage all day long here on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290. This segment of the program brought to you by our good friends at Linden Market Dental Center. Dr. Rikus and his team provide modern and comprehensive dental care for the entire family. To make an appointment today, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. All righty, gentlemen, let's get started looking at the Winnipeg Jets forwards at the 20-game mark. We're going to be doing our usual evaluation. A player gets a +1 if they have exceeded our expectations, a player gets a 0 if they have matched our expectations, and a player gets a -1 if they are below our expectations.
We want to got to give a shout out to my dad, John Ginsburg, who proposed this because we used to give out kind of regular grades, and being the great math professor that he was, said, why don't you guys just do +1, -1, 0 for expectations instead of, because we always used to give out a lot of, you know, B's and B pluses. I think this is much better.
This is why we call it the John Ginsburg scale.
Thanks. Yes. Thanks, Dad.
In fact, I think we should replace John with Ezzy for the rest of the show. Anybody else up for that idea? Yes. We want to hear from you, of course. Send us your tweets at Illegal Curve. Who's matching? Who's exceeding? Who's below your expectations? You can also send us your texts at 1290-90. Standard messaging rates do apply. Let's start with Mark Scheifele of the Winnipeg Jets. He currently leads the team in points with 20 points in 20 games played. That crucial 1 point per game played, Mark. In your evaluation of Mark Scheifele, is he matching your expectations? Is he below, or is he exceeding your expectations?
Yeah, you got to go matching expectations for Scheifele, right? I mean, he's been a top offensive player for the Jets for some time now. We're talking, you know, 4 or 5 years. So you mentioned, you know, he's at a point per game. That's kind of, you know, where we expect him to be, right? And I really liked his game. Like, you could argue that game against the Panthers was maybe his best game of the year. And that's what you like to see, first game of a road trip, right? So, I mean, I expected nothing less than, you know, 80 to 90 points. And it's not just about the points, boys. I mean, this is a guy who is a bona fide number one center, has been for quite some time, and is a leader on this team. So I have no problem with Scheifele's game this year. And I think, with the exceptions of, you know, a bad game here or there, everybody's going to have a bad game here and there. I think that he's doing exactly what Paul Maurice and the Jets are expecting him to do.
Dave?
Yeah, he's met my expectations. I mean, I'm with Ezzy. He's a guy you would expect to be around a point per game player at this point in his career. Maybe, I mean, I think I had him, if I recall correctly, on our over-under, I probably had him slightly above a point per game. But his shooting percentage is higher than his career average right now at about 18. He's at 18.2%. His career average, I believe, is 15.9. A little bit below what he did last year when he had the 38 goals, but he's been good. I mean, to Ezzy's point, there's been some nights where you're kind of like looking for him a little bit, but overall, I think he's met my expectations.
Moving on to Patrick Laine, the other Jets forward who's currently averaging a point a game. Laine, 18 points in 18 games played. Of course, the goal numbers are down, only 4 goals so far this season, but 14 assists, so which is certainly on pace for a career high for Patrick Laine in terms of the assist totals. Your thoughts, Dave, on Patrick Laine through 18 of his games so far this season?
Well, it's hard to say he's exceeded my expectations because for Patrick Laine, I've always expected him to be a goal scorer. So when he's not scoring those goals, it, you know, you look at it and think to yourself, okay, well, that's curious. But the problem is he's been so good in every other facet of the game. So, you know, the expectations for him have always been a goal scorer, but he's kind of changed the expectation because he's producing in different ways than he has traditionally. Now, his shooting percentage is only at 6.3%. For him, that's way below his average.
Mm-hmm.
I believe the league average is probably in around 12, but his Patrick Laine's career average is 15.1.
Right.
So we can see clearly that's the reason why he only has 4 goals this season, as opposed to if he was shooting what even close to his normal would be, he'd be up over in double digits already. But again, it's the assists. He has more assists already this season than he had into March of last season. And he's contributing in other facets of the game. So to me, he's met my expectations, although they've been modified slightly based on the way he's played for the last 18 games.
Yeah, Dave, I'm going to give him a plus one. I went back and forth on Laine A, and I mean, we all know that the goal totals are going to come up. Mm-hmm. And I think most people expected Laine A to probably be around, you know, 10 to 12 goals at this point in the season. And as you mentioned, you know, a lot of that has to do with the power play, right? He gets does a lot of his damage on the power play. He hasn't been doing that. I think those goals will come. I don't know if he's
5 out of his 18 points come on the power play so far this
right,
season.
And you obviously expect more than that, right? So I expect him to still, at the very least, finish the season with 30 goals, maybe more. I don't know if he's going to be able to hit 40 just because we're already 20 games into the season. He's only got 4, but many of the reasons Dave just outlined, that's why I'm giving him a plus one, because overall, the steps that he's taken in his game, and you forget, guys, that he's only 21 years old. He isn't even 22 years old yet, but on a night in, night out basis, the things he's doing away from the puck. And as you mentioned, Dave, he's, I think, showing that he's an elite playmaker, not just a good playmaker, an elite playmaker with, you know, the chemistry that he's found between himself and Mark Scheifele, right? And obviously Mark Scheifele is benefiting. We talked about his goal totals. He's benefiting from having a guy like Laine A on his wing, right? So I'm giving Laine A a plus one. Also the maturity. I've seen so much maturity in Laine A's game. I think after he signed the big contract, he knew, I've got to be better. I've got to step up, be a leader on this team, and be a better overall player. So the goals are going to come. I mean, like we said, maybe he doesn't hit 40 goals this year, but he's going to start to score goals. We've seen him score goals in bunches, so it's going to happen.
If he gets 30 goals but ends up with, you know, 80 points, nobody's going to complain because he's going to be a point-a-game player, which he hasn't been at this stage in his career. Nikolaj Ehlers, the guy who was subject to all sorts of ridiculous trade rumors all summer long that nobody really in Winnipeg believed to be accurate. Ehlers has 15 points in his first 20 games, 8 goals and 7 assists. Started off, you know, tremendously, maybe slowed down a little bit as of late. How would you evaluate Nikolaj Ehlers so far this season? Is he meeting your expectations? Is he below your expectations? Or is he exceeding your expectations?
Yeah, I mean, I'll start off. I mean, I would say he has exceeded my expectations. I wanted to go matched my expectations, but I think similar to Laine A, we've seen a maturity in his game. I think Nikolaj Ehlers was not only not happy with the way he played in the first round against the Blues, he wasn't really happy with the way the regular season finished. And we know that he's a play driver, probably the best possession player on this team. Obviously, you know, we talked about the zone entries, Dave. You mentioned that in your article on illegalcurve.com. I mean, this is a guy who's right up there with players like Connor McDavid and Nikita Kucherov, a guy that can, you know, take the puck from end to end and make things happen with that speed and those amazingly slick hands. So I got to go, you know, plus one with Ehlers because, you know, not only is he on pace for a career year, but this is a guy that has rarely had a bad game. He's been one of the Jets' best players almost every night.
Yeah, and I think to Ezzy's point, he really has shown how conscientious he is. He went back, you know, and it's been documented how he watched his games last year to see where he can improve. And I think that's what he actually talked about it yesterday in Tampa about the changes to his game, the maturity in his game, the fact that he does, you know, he goes, I do a lot less of my junior moves. He goes, sometimes they come out, but, you know, a lot less circling. There's a lot more like puck, you know, straight lines with Nikolaj Ehlers. And when he's moving, like to Ezzy's point, it's hard to touch the guy. I mean, he is one of the most dynamic players on this team. To me, he's exceeded my expectations because, you know, I expected him to have a bounce back, but to my mind, he's just been such a good play driver for this Winnipeg Jets team. And so I've got him exceeding my expectations.
Kyle Connor, of course, was a subject to a lot of talk in the offseason, given that he was an RFA, didn't sign until, you know, just, you know, towards the end, the start of training camp. He's got 14 points in his first 20 games this season for the Winnipeg Jets, 6 goals and 8 assists. Dave, Kyle Connor's evaluation in your mind?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say he's met my expectations. I mean, Kyle Connor is a, you know, we talk about how dynamic he can be. He's another player who's shooting well below his career percentage. You know, his career over the years, he's got 14.1% shooting percentage. Mm-hmm. Right now, he's at 8.2. So again, you know, we talked about this Sean Tierney about regressing back towards the mean, you know, in a positive manner. And you would expect someone like Kyle Connor to start having those goals, you know, come about and start to score a little bit more consistently for the Jets team, which is something they need. They need, you know, we talked about 5-on-5 goals. Well, you know, Kyle Connor had 31 and 34 goals the last two seasons, and the Jets really need Kyle Connor to be in that 30-goal range again this year. So to me, Kyle Connor's had an okay season. He hasn't been bad. He hasn't been phenomenal. So I'd have him as met my expectations.
Yeah, I'm with you, Dave. I mean, for me, Connor's met my expectations. I mean, it's been well documented. He only had 2 goals in his first 10 games, and he's obviously started to pick it up much better the last 10 games. And, you know, you have to give him credit. He has bounced around, right? They had him off of the top line. Now he's back on the top line. But, I mean, you talk about Ehlers and a lot of the same things apply for Connor, right? Great speed, great hands. He's a sniper. He can, you know, set plays up, and he's obviously, you know, really effective on the power play as well. We've seen him score some really nifty goals on the power play. So, you know, I can't give him +1 because I think, you know, we expected goals. We expected points. He's an offensive minded player. Probably the main reason for me he doesn't get a +1 is because he has struggled in his own zone at times as well. And that was, you know, a knock on Connor last year on that top line, that at times, you know, he can get a little bit lost in his own zone. And I'm not saying he's a bad defensive player, but, you know, another guy who's still, you know, he's 22 years old. He's still a young player. He's still, you know, trying to round out his 200-foot game. So, you know, Connor has been fine. He's a bona fide top six NHLer. He's not going anywhere off of that top line. He's a guy, you know, it's going to score a lot of goals this year and in the future. He's got a bright future ahead of him. So, you know, I'll go matching expectations because with the exception of maybe a rough start to the season, I think he's playing really well at a really high level, and we're getting everything we expected out of him.
Player that you're probably not getting a lot out of in the first year of his $8.25 million per season contract is Jets captain Blake Wheeler. The struggles have been well documented for Wheeler to start the year. 10 points in 20 games, 5 goals, 5 assists. The power play numbers, only 2 power play points so far this season, down significantly. Evaluate Blake Wheeler to start the year, Dave.
Well, I mean, he's obviously below expectations. You can't help. You know, the guy has 92 back-to-back 91-point seasons, and now he's on pace for 40. So, I mean, that's a significant downgrade. And look, at the end of the day, Blake Wheeler is the Jets captain. He's the, you know, heartbeat of this team, you would say. And he's doing what is necessary for this team to continue to try and have success. You know, he when Paul Maurice asked him if he'd move to center, he said absolutely, or whatever, you know, was affirmative in his response right away. Mm-hmm. So he's prepared to do whatever it takes. And if that means a sacrifice of points, maybe that's a sacrifice of points, not being with Mark Scheifele, maybe not being on the top power play unit, whatever it is that he's prepared to do. So, you know, sometimes, and we have to factor that in, right? Like, guys aren't going to have the points that they traditionally have. But at the same time, you know, for Blake Wheeler to only have 10 points, 5 goals, 5 assists at this point, his shooting percentage is actually pretty much his just a little bit below his career average, but it's close to what it's been the last couple of years. But again, like I said, he's just not getting those same opportunities, and he's just not putting it into the back of the net, which at the end of the day, the Jets still need their captain to be doing, considering the contract he has.
Yeah, I'm getting the signal from producer Shawnee Sor, so I got to make this quick. But yeah, it's got to be -1 for me. And, you know, Dave mentioned it. It's the fact that his point totals are not there, but it's also just night in, night out, Blake Wheeler is not driving the bus offensively. This year, it's been Mark Scheifele, it's been Nikolai Ehlers, it's been Kyle Connor, Patrick Laine. Wheeler mm-hmm. was always one of those players.
He's been invisible at nights.
Well, he's had some bad games. I mean, you think of that game against the Devils a couple weeks ago, he was invisible.
Yeah.
Right? And obviously, you know, I would say last game he was pretty good, but it's the power play that's probably the biggest concern to me. The last couple of years, going back to the year the Jets went to the West Final, I mean, Wheeler was one of the most dangerous players in the league on the power play. We're still looking for that dangerous player, right? So it's really peculiar to me that he only has 10 points after 20 games. I expect him to probably increase that pace. I imagine he gets probably finishes the season closer to 60 points than 40 points, but he has some work to do. But it's got to be minus one for me because there hasn't been the same consistency in his game, not just offensively, but I think overall. So we're still looking for that 90-point player.
We'll come back to our player evaluations throughout the course of the program on this Saturday morning. But when we come back, Mike McIntyre joins us for more Winnipeg Jets conversation. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Saturday morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio, 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. We want to hear from you. Send us your tweets at Illegal Curve. You can also send us your text messages. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. And of course, our website has got the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio that's available at illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
As part of Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day, we're pleased to welcome to the program our good friend from the Winnipeg Free Press, Mike McIntyre. Mike, good morning and thanks so much for joining us.
Good to be here as always, guys.
How is beautiful Regina as you're getting set for tomorrow's Western Division Final?
Well, I'd probably rather be in Tampa Bay right now, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah.
But colleague Jason Bell has that plum assignment. He's on this road trip with the Jets. Regina was just here, of course, a few weeks ago for the Heritage Classic. It'll be weird covering a football game at Mosaic tomorrow instead of a hockey game, but no doubt the Winnipeg club will hope for a similar result as the one that happened a couple weeks back here against Calgary.
Covering hockey, covering football, you're a real renaissance man there, Mike. obviously, we brought you on to talk about the Jets, and you know we're doing sort of our 20-game evaluation for much of the show so far today. We've looked at some players. We've looked at the team in general. You know, we sort of made the point off the top of the program that after 20 games, the Jets being 11-8-1, that their record almost flatters them based on the performance we've seen on a lot of different nights. How would you look at this team through the first 20 games?
Yeah, I'd agree that's fair. I think you can say the Jets have probably overachieved a little bit when you look at some of the underlying numbers. You know, obviously the goal differential, never a good thing when you're giving up more than you're scoring. Special teams have not been very good. 5-on-5 scoring has been a real struggle at times. And the home record is mediocre at best. So if you had told me all those things and had me guess what their record was going to be, I'd probably have them somewhere under 500 and maybe right at 500 instead. Here they are 3 games over. And not only sitting in a playoff spot, they're actually in the top 3 in their division. I'm not sure if that says, you know, what that says about the Jets or what that says about the Central. It's a weird year, guys, in the NHL. And, you know, there's a couple teams, mainly in the East, Washington being one of them. The Islanders are way up there, Boston, that, you know, seem to be pretty loaded. But in the West, my goodness, there's just a lot of ho-hum teams. And that means the Jets have kind of been able to hang around and, I know they use the term all the time, stay in the fight. They've very much done that. But, yeah, I think when you look at the record, they're probably a little bit fortunate to be where they are. And I think they can start with thanking the guy in net for a lot of that, because Connor Hellebuck, if he hasn't been as strong as he has been, a few of those wins probably turn into losses.
You know, Mike, you mentioned stay in the fight, and Jay Bell mentioned that in his article today, that the Jets are saying that so much that they should probably ask MPI to put that on license plates, and I think Jay is bang on there. But, you know, you mentioned that you believe that the Jets are overachieving, and I agree with you 100% when you consider power plays 21st in the league, penalty kills second last in the league, Line A only has 4 goals after 20 games, Wheeler's only got 10 points in 20 games. If you're a glass-half-full type of person, if the Jets turn all of these things around, the special teams gets better, Line A starts scoring at the clip that we're used to, is that a sign that the Jets are going to eventually turn this around and everything is going to be all good and the Jets are going to be able to get back to being that kind of, you know, team that competes for the Central Division crown?
I am a glass half full guy, kind of guy, of course. I guess it depends what's in the glass. I'll take some chocolate milk any day of the week. I would agree, except the glass half empty would be, what if Connor Hellebuck's play regresses more to the norm? Like, is he playing at a level that he can maintain? 2 years ago, I would, you know, based on what we saw in his Vezina Trophy finalist season, if that's the Connor Hellebuck I think we're comparing to, sure, that is what he is. But of course, he regressed, as did most of his team last year, and that's why it's hard to maybe say whether this is the Connor Hellebuck we're going to see all year or a slightly different version of it. So, but you're right. I mean, there are enough elements to their game that they have not been very good at on a consistent basis that you can say, well, it's only a matter of time before this gets better or that gets better. I mean, with the weapons they have, the power play can't continue to be as ineffective as it is. The penalty kill, which I think has been, for the most part, better of late, still has a lot of room to improve. You'd think the 5-on-5 scoring wouldn't be the struggle that it is, again, with some of the firepower that they have in the lineup. I think you're right that there's enough reason for optimism to suggest that there's a lot of room for improvement with this Jets team, and maybe not as many categories that you could say that they've, we look at it and say, well, there's no way they can keep that up. One of the concerning things would be the very low number of regulation wins. But, you know, the old saying, they don't ask how, they just ask how many. The fact is the Jets have more wins beyond regulation, 6, than the 5 in regulation so far this year. So, you know, but they all count, right? And they're 2 points no matter how you get it. But again, there's another stat where if you're a glass half full person, you could say, well, they're bound to start winning some more regulation. So, yeah, it's been a weird season, no doubt. And considering all the roster turnover and what they've dealt with injury-wise, you know, first with the blue line, and then all of a sudden the injuries started hitting up front. Also throwing guys that they have a fourth line that, to me, is just not doing a whole lot right now. They're basically a three-line team. There's reason to be optimistic for sure.
You know, Mike, speaking of injuries, obviously Brian Little has been out and there's no real timeline for his return. So necessitated Blake Wheeler moving to the middle. What have you thought about the captain's move to the middle, and how have you liked him and Scheifele being split up like that?
Yeah, I have liked it a lot. I don't think this is the Blake Wheeler of 2 years ago, but he doesn't necessarily have to be, because they also have a number of players now, young players who are 2 years further in their development, Laine, Ehlers, Connor, Rothrovic, who I don't think they need Blake Wheeler to do as much as they did 2 seasons ago, where he was, you know, one of the main couple pieces on this team. Now, I don't want to say he can just be a complimentary piece, but there's enough other talent there that they don't need Blake Wheeler to just be, you know, the driving force at any one point. That being said, I think he has been very good. I've seen an extra jump in his step, if you want to put it that way. Like, I think it's rejuvenated him a little bit. I thought Blake Wheeler was looking kind of slow and, you know, just stuck in the mud a little bit. And I think putting him at center, and the extra responsibilities that come with that, and then throwing a couple of absolute speed demons on his wing, Blake Wheeler's picked up his game in the last week or so, and that's a good thing. And I like how the lines are constructed right now. To me, I mean, I think a big part of the recent success with the Jets, forget about Wheeler or Scheifele, I think it's that third line that maybe still isn't putting up big numbers, but I think the Lowry, Kopp, Perreault line is starting to look as dominant as the Lowry, Kopp, Tanev line did at times last year, and I think that is really, you know, helping the Jets in terms of in-game momentum and stuff. But, yeah, I think the three lines that they have right now are clicking for the most part, and there's no reason to change it up.
Mike McIntyre is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Mike, of course, covers the Jets for the Winnipeg Free Press. Mike, final question for you. You know, I look at Thursday's game against Florida with the Jets scoring those 4 5-on-5 goals as potentially, and you know, emphasis on potentially, a turning point maybe for where the Jets are able to get the performance they want in their own zone, but then are also able to contribute 5-on-5 in the offensive zone. You know, do you think that they're maybe beginning to understand Paul Maurice's emphasis and his system a little bit better now that they've reached the 20-game mark and understand how it needs to be played to be successful on both sides of the ice?
Absolutely, and I think, guys, I'd put that win right near the top of the list in terms of just overall quality performances by the Jets. To me, that wasn't a game the other night. There's some this year where you could say, oh, they stole that one, or they got lucky, or their goalie bailed them out. I think that was a complete team effort, and that was a really good win for the Jets, one of their best of the season. And for sure, I think there was a lot of encouraging signs in that game that, you know, you can build off. And, you know, the 5-on-5 scoring was obviously a big part of it. They didn't even get a power play in that game. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the power play didn't have a chance to contribute. But, yeah, I think that's a really good game to build on. And like a couple others they've had this year, I think back to the game in Pittsburgh, they went into a place that they had not won in forever and played a really solid game. You know, that, to me, that is one of those really good wins this year that the Jets looked a little more like I think everybody expected them to look. That was kind of more of a signature win. Whether they can keep it up obviously remains to be seen. They're going to run into a Tampa Bay team that just put up 9 the other night and suddenly, you know, seems to be feeling pretty good about where its game is at. So this is a tough road trip, obviously. The Jets get off on a great start with it. And they didn't even need Connor Hellebuyck in net to do it. So you've got a more rested Hellebuyck now, and certainly some encouraging signs. But the road ahead is obviously a tough one. The Jets have played well on the road, but my goodness, they have so many road games coming up here that they're going to need to kind of bottle up what they did in Sunrise the other night and keep it going here for the foreseeable future.
Mike McIntyre joins us from Regina, where he's covering tomorrow afternoon's Bombers Riders Western Division Final.
Mike, do you just have a condo there now, or are you just Airbnb? Or
yeah, I'm sort of feeling that way. Although my colleague Jeff Hamilton, who I drove out here with, my goodness, this is Jeff's fourth trip to the Queen City this year. The Bombers have actually, they played a preseason game, they played 2 regular season games, and now they're playing a playoff game. He drove every time, so Jeff has a lot more miles on him than I do in terms of Regina. But yeah, I'm here in Regina. I'm California dreaming, though, guys, because I'm on the next Jets road trip, which actually isn't that far away. So I hear it's going to be a little bit warmer in Southern California in a week or so from now than it is here in Regina.
There you go. From Pilsner to the beautiful people of California, Mike McIntyre does it all. Mike, thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Take care, guys.
Take care. Mentioned the Western Division Final. Of course, the Blue and Gold Game Day complete wraparound coverage starts tomorrow afternoon here on TSN Radio 1290. The guys will be downtown at Boston Pizza City Place. Boston Pizza, the official sponsor of the Blue Bombers and the Grey Cup on TSN 1290, is the place to watch the West Final tomorrow. And there's viewing parties at all Boston Pizza locations. So if you're looking for a place to catch tomorrow afternoon's Western Division Final, we highly recommend Boston Pizza City Place. When we come back, we continue our evaluations of the Winnipeg Jets forwards. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
For Griffith in the faceoff circle, goes down low for Shibasov, back out in front for Griffith, shoots, and he scores! Set! They worked it around. They got it for Griffith. A couple of looks. And Seth Griffith, he's a shooter now. He goes up under the bar, and the Moose outlasts the Rampage. for a 2-1 win.
Time for a look at the TSN Radio scoreboard. We look at last night's Moose Rampage game. The Moose victorious in overtime on that Seth Griffith goal. You just heard it right there. A 2-1 victory for the Moose. That's 5 in a row for the Moose now.
Yep.
And Mikael Burden, lights out last night, David Minuk?
Yeah, he made 45 stops on 46 shots. He's been unbelievable. You know, he was a little shaky to start the season, but he's been, as the Moose have gone, he has gone because he's been the driver. He's made just tremendous. He's only given up 3 goals in his last 5 games, and he had back-to-back.
It's incredible.
Yeah, he had back-to-back shutouts on consecutive days.
Almost scored a goal.
Mm-hmm. You know, his playing the puck is still a little bit much, and you can see sometimes he makes some errors. I mean, he's given up opportunities, but that's what you're getting, right? You're getting a guy who Jonathan Kovacevic basically said allows the defense not to worry about it getting hit as much because he plays the puck so well, and teams have to game plan against him. So Mikael Burden's been phenomenal. You know, Sammy Niku's been very good for the Manitoba Moose. Jansen Harkins, that first top line of Griffith, Harkins, and Chibasov have been very good. Andrew Chibasov's a kind of a beast, and I talked to Pascal Vincent, the coach of the Manitoba Moose, after the game yesterday, and he was talking about Andrew Chibasov and how good he's been. So, no, the Moose are rolling. They've won 7 of the last 8. They're back to 500. They wrap up the homestand tomorrow at Bell MTS Place in an afternoon contest against the Rampage, and then they are out on the road.
I'm not saying it's all because of us, but I'm just saying the Moose have won 7 of the last 8 since Pascal Vincent joined us on the program, so the illegal curve bump might be real and it might be spectacular. And the Moose are obviously playing some good hockey as of late. Let's get back into our evaluation of the Winnipeg Jets, where we left off. Blake Wheeler, both got a -1 from both of you gentlemen as we evaluate the players on matching our expectations, exceeding our expectations, or below our expectations. We want to hear from you. Send us your tweets at Illegal Curve. Send us your text, 1290-90. Standard messaging rates do apply. Jack Roslovic, he's got 7 points in his first 20 games for the Winnipeg Jets this season, playing sort of up and down the lineup, but now into that top 6 role, particularly with Brian Little out of the lineup. Ezzy, give us your evaluation, +1, -1, or even for Jack Roslovic.
Yeah, this was a little bit of a tough one for me. I really wanted to go +1. I realize, you know, the results haven't quite been there. I mean, you know, you talk about, you know, the 3 goals and the 7 points and everything like that. But, you know, to me, he has met my expectations because I expected more out of him, quite frankly, based on last year. And we know that, you know, the report that was coming from Aaron Portsline, you know, all the problems that, you know, Roslovic was having with his usage. We know, guys, that Jack Roslovic has way too much talent to be a bottom 3 forward, right? We knew that he was going to either be kind of a staple on that third line, or now he's being elevated to that second line, Dave. So, I mean, we know Roslovic's got all of the tools. He's fast. He's got good hands. You'd like to see, you know, some more goals, but, you know, probably what I've liked about his game is that he's been much scrappier. I mean, he's been much more involved physically, you know, behind the net, behind the goal line. I think Roslovic is a guy that wants the results, Dave, and he's used to that at the AHL level. He's used to that when he was playing with Miami of Ohio. So I think the results are going to come. I mean, I absolutely think Roslovic is a guy that can score 20 goals at the NHL level. Probably not going to happen this year, but no, I've liked his game. I just can't give him a +1. Because I think he at times has been inconsistent offensively, but his defensive game to me has probably been the most impressive.
Dave Minuk.
You know what I would go? He's met my expectations, and that's mostly because I have such high expectations for Jack Roslovic. I mean, he is, to Ezzy's point, he was one of the most dominant players in the AHL, you know, back in 2016-17 and for the 30-something games that he played in 2017-18 before he earned the call-up to the Jets. So to me, Jack Roslovic is a player that I have extraordinarily high expectations for. I think, you know, his passing is right up there in terms of this team and how good he is at getting the puck to his line mates. So there's a lot of untapped potential with Jack Roslovic. I think, to Ezzy's point, I think you're seeing a little more consistency in his game, but there's still a lot more to give. So to me, he's met my expectations because I have such high ones for him.
Andrew Kopp, he also has 7 points in 20 games, matching the exact stat line of Roslovic with 3 goals, 4 assists. Apparently might get some power play time with the Jets based on practice yesterday. He apparently was a tipping machine and a goal scoring machine in Jets practice yesterday ahead of tonight's game or this afternoon's game in Tampa Bay. Dave, Andrew Kopp, meeting below or above your expectations?
Here's another player who's met my expectations because they're very high for him. I think Andrew Kopp is that very versatile player. I think there's, you know, and it's interesting, right? Because Andrew Kopp was elevated to the power play, it sounds like, largely because Mark Scheifele wanted him there. and Mark Scheifele knows that he's got a certain potential. So as a result, he wanted Kopp to be given that opportunity. I like Andrew Kopp. I think he's, you know, his shooting percentage is below his career average. It was about 11.1. Right now he's shooting at about 7.9%. So his goals should probably be a little higher if he was hitting his average. But I you know, you love what he does for you. You love that he can play on the PK. You love that he can play on the power play now. And he's been given that elevated opportunity. So him and Adam Lowry have formed that dynamic duo that we've, you know, come to expect. Obviously, Kopp can be a natural center, but he's been very good on the wing. And I think Andrew Kopp is just like, again, when you have high expectations for players, they're for a reason. So I think he's met my expectations for this year.
Yeah, for me, it's the same thing, Dave. And you mentioned, you know, he's a player that can play on the first line. He can also be a fourth line guy. Obviously, he's on the third line now. That's where we've been expecting to see him. But he is a player that his best attributes are not necessarily found when you talk about goals or assist. Great possession player, but he's a guy that Paul Maurice can put out there in any situation, and he has for the last, I would say, 4 years. And he has been such an integral part of the team. You know, when you talk about all the injuries that they've had up front and on the back end, I mean, he's been a staple. He's played every game for the Jets, and you know, I really like his game. If you've listened to the show for the last 4 or 5 years, you know that I was always promoting Kopp. Dave, too. I was always, you know, really showing how much we love about his game. And so I'm going to say is meeting expectations. And I think, you know, the offensive totals will come. But his two-way game, and he's probably the Jets' best penalty killer, I would say, as a forward. So, you know, he's come as advertised this year. You know what you're going to get night in, night out from him.
We'll keep looking at the Jets forwards and the Jets defense still to come through 20 games, but game number 21 goes this afternoon in Tampa Bay. And when we come back, Brian Engblom, Tampa Bay Lightning analyst, is going to join us to talk about the Jets opponent. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve as part of Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day. The Jets and the Lightning later on this afternoon from Tampa Bay. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us here in studio via text message. Send your text to 129090. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Alongside Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. We're pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend, Tampa Bay Lightning analyst, Brian Engblom. Brian, good morning, and how are things down in Florida on this Saturday morning?
Everything's great, guys. Good to hear from you. The weather for us is low 60s, which is actually a little chilly, but I won't rub that in. I'm a Winnipeg boy, and I know what it's like in November there.
That's right. I'm glad you don't have to pull out your Canada Goose just yet down there in South Florida there, there, Brian. I obviously brought you on to talk about this afternoon's game and to talk about the Lightning so far this season. You know, they have actually played the fewest games in the entire NHL. I think a lot of that has to do with the fact they took their trip overseas to Sweden. But this Lightning team, 9-5-2, so they're playing good hockey. They're not playing juggernaut-level hockey that we saw last year. Did they maybe learn something from how well they played all regular season last season, and then they flamed out in the first round of the playoffs, and that they're maybe pacing themselves a little bit more this year?
Oh, yeah, they learned something, all right. But no, it's not about pacing. It's about reconstructing the team, to be honest with you. It's their focus. They totally changed their focus. They are trying to pay attention to details of the game, play by the clock and the score, and be ready to win one-goal games. They know what happened to them, and they had an unreal season. I mean, it's, you know, record tying, 62 wins. It was crazy the way they won games. They outscored their problems a lot, and Vasilevsky and Louis Domingue covered up a lot of issues, and it all came home to roost in four games against Columbus. And boom, it was over. And the shock value was, it rippled all summer. It hurt bad. It was embarrassing. Everything. So do you want to come back and play the same way? You'd be an idiot to do it. So they knew it. And it's
it's been a struggle because old habits are hard to break. John Cooper alluded to that in training camp. So we've got some habits to break, and they're tough habits. And when you've had as much success as they did last year by scoring and making plays and razzle-dazzle and playing fast and, you know, well, we made a few mistakes, but, you know, you overlook it. It's hard to break. And so, yeah, they've been stretching and pulling and trying to find line combinations and focusing and practicing hard and battle drills and all of that. I mean, really remaking what the focus is of the team. That's a hard thing to do. I think they're finally getting to the point where the players now, the habits have been, you know, broken down at least a little bit. They never go away, but, you know, every team has that issue. But I think over the last 3-4 games, maybe even 5, it's been a little up and down, but you're starting to see that they're paying attention to the right things. And it's been really interesting to watch.
You know, Brian, Drew mentioned earlier the Global Series in Sweden. That was just a week ago, and obviously the Lightning picked up the couple wins over the Buffalo Sabres. Victor Hedman, of course, played in both of those games in his home country. It wasn't certain going into those two games if Hedman was going to play, and not only did he play, he was really good. Picked up a goal in the second game, and obviously picked up 3 assists in that big 9-3 win over the Rangers. When you look back at the season, when it's April and we expect the Lightning to be in the playoffs, they might even end up, you know, winning the division or the President's Trophy because, as we talked about, they did last year. So is it possible that we're going to look back on that Global Series in Sweden and we're going to say that was the turning point in the season?
Yeah, you could very well be right there. The players have talked about it already. They had 4 days. We got there on Sunday, practiced Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday. They had Wednesday off, practiced Thursday, and then played Buffalo back-to-back Friday, Saturday, and went home. So they had 4 days there where they could have fun. They practiced hard. They have said repeatedly since they came back that they really felt like they spent a lot of time together. They had, you know, meals together. They went out together, the whole team. So they've already said repeatedly that they feel like they've really become a good, solid team, even away from the ice. So they've been working on that. They have had a lot of practice time. They have played fewer games than anybody in the league, as you mentioned. And because of that, the standings are a little skewed. I mean, so they have games in hand. I mean, they came back from Stockholm. They had 5 games in hand on Toronto, and Toronto was only 4 points ahead of them. I haven't checked this morning. I don't know it off the top of my head. But you get the idea. They've got games in hand on everybody. So it'll take a couple of weeks for that to even out. They have to win the games, of course, to make it worthwhile. But where they are in the standings now is certainly a little misleading. And I think there's a confidence level now that they're starting to be that different team, and they have to continue to execute it.
You know, Brian, Patrick Maroon won a Stanley Cup with the Blues last season. What has he been able to bring to the Lightning team so far this year?
A lot. He's been really good for them. He's a real laid back, always got a smile on his face and a funny line, you know, and a wisecrack. That's for reporters, that's for teammates, and that's for opposition players. And he's also got a swagger of having just won. On the ice, he has given them a guy that can go into the offensive corners and just get a hold of the puck and just real old-fashioned, just sort of swing his body around, hang on, drifting behind the net with the puck, back into the corner, allow guys to get open in front. They haven't had a guy like that. They've always played quick and fast and turnover and pass. So it's given them a different look. And he's played now the last handful of games with Paquette at center, who's just nasty to play with, and Yanni Gourde, who's completely opposite to Pat Maroon. He's just all over the place, 100 miles an hour. So what Maroon can't do, Yanni Gourde can do, and vice versa. And it's a terrific combination. But also, he's had a couple of key fights, has Maroon, in the preseason and in the regular season. And when anybody has taken a run at Braden Point or Kucherov or whatever, he swings by the opponent's bench and he's just yipping away. And it's like, you know, anybody want to go? And they haven't had that. They didn't play that way last year and it hurt them. They got pushed around. Braden Point got run severely down the stretch several times and he was a hurting guy all season long. That's why he had double hip surgery in the off season. and Stamkos was run at Kucherov. I mean, because that's what teams do, right? They run at your top players, especially when everything is on the line. Well, Maroon's come out and went, not that guy. Nope. And so he's made everybody sit up that much taller on the bench. He's been a terrific addition.
Brian Engblom is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Brian is a Tampa Bay Lightning analyst. The Jets and the Lightning later this afternoon from Tampa Bay. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Brian, it wasn't until August that the Lightning signed Kevin Shattenkirk to a one-year, $1.75 million contract. And they always say some of the best signings are those that happen under the radar, or those that happen not on July 1st. Just how important has Shattenkirk been to this Lightning defense? I mean, he's putting up great point totals. 15 points in 16 games. What have you seen from Kevin Shattenkirk at this point in this season?
We've seen the Kevin Shattenkirk from 3 and 4 and 5 years ago and more. The one that started out a rookie career in Colorado and was outstanding right out of college and then went to St. Louis and did a lot of great things offensively. The last couple of years with the Rangers, he was injured. It certainly didn't go anywhere near the way it was supposed to. And he was very disappointed being a guy from that area. You know, it was a dream come true for him. So the dreams were dashed. He got bought out. And it was a terrific acquisition for the Tampa Bay Lightning. Shattenkirk is the type of player with his skill set to play on an elite team, which I think the Lightning still are, because they have so many goal scorers and trophy winners, et cetera. He can be that X factor that can really put you over the top. When you put him as the cornerstone piece on a young team and then add the injuries that he had last year, that's where New York was at, it fell apart. So he's in exactly the right place. I think he jumped at the chance to come here. He knows himself. He knows how good the Lightning are. He knows he has a chance to win, in a very big way. He had fit in with Victor Hedman finally. It took a while, and that really wasn't surprising. I didn't like the way it looked the first 4 or 5 games. They played together. They split them up. They put them back together now. They're both a little unorthodox, and it took a little while to figure out what each can do at any given time. But now that's the fit that makes the most sense, and you can tell that's what the management wants it to work. And now it's really starting to work. So when he's playing with Victor Hedman, he's going to get some extra room because, I mean, they got to pay attention to Hedman too, right? And vice versa. And Shattenkirk has one of the great gifts that he has, along with his passing, especially from the blue line in. He has an uncanny ability to get the puck through from the point. He just wrists it in there. He almost never gets it blocked by the first guy coming out, and that's imperative. And a lot of guys really aren't that good at that. If you get blocked by the first guy coming out, you are causing a lot of hell for your team because you got a lot of guys caught then and you're scrambling to defend. So Shattenkirk has a real gift that way, and it's a real talent. And a lot of his points have come because he gets pucks through and he gets them to the net and they get deflections and tips and second and third chances. And he moves the puck with great confidence. But also away from the ice, very similar to Maroon, he's got a terrific laid-back personality, and I think that personality has fit in really well. It loosened some guys up on the Tampa Bay Lightning, and it's been an interesting contribution he's had all the way around.
Brian, last question for you. I'm not sure if Andrei Vasilevskiy is going to get the start tonight. Maybe you'll be able to let us know, just a few hours before puck drop. 3 o'clock Central Time, of course, is the Jets-Lightning game this afternoon. Obviously, Vasilevsky's numbers haven't been good. We don't have to go over that. Anybody can look Vasilevsky's numbers up. Obviously, he had a nice game, picked up the win against the Rangers. But how concerned are you? How concerned is the team about Vasilevsky's play? And is this maybe a good thing that he's battling through a little adversity? Because last year, it seemed like he was just good from the start of the season and obviously ended up picking up the Vezina.
It's a terrific point. And he well-deserved the Vezina. And for people who kind of went, oh, well, he's playing on such a great team. I don't know why he won the Vezina. Well, for reasons that I just told you, that he covered up a lot of mistakes. I mean, a lot. He was all alone on so many situations. People don't know that. We see every game. So we know the difference here. And he fully deserved to win the Vezina trophy. I thought he could have won it even the year before. He has been a front runner in that department the last couple of seasons. I thought he got off to a kind of a mediocre start, for sure, for his standards. He had a couple of, you know, poor games, I would say, for his standards again. And he's had a couple of really good, solid games. So I think you've hit the nail on the head. Some adversity for him, it's some adversity for the team. I think it's a reflection, you know, both ways. And I think it'll make him stronger. He's an incredible athlete. If you ever watch him in the warm-ups, what he does, and at the end of the warm-up when he just goes into full-on splits and just kind of sits there for about 45 seconds, it pains me just to look at him when he does that, and especially when I'm between the benches. He's about, comes out the center ice, goes through the whole routine. He is incredibly flexible for a big man, very athletic, and, of course, you know, his experience puts him at a level where he can be a number one guy and one of the best in the league for many years to come.
Brian Engblom is a Tampa Bay Lightning analyst. The Jets and the Lightning, a 3 p.m. puck drop from Tampa Bay later this afternoon, a game you can, of course, hear live on TSN Radio 1290. Brian, always good to chat with you. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Anytime, guys. Stay warm.
Yeah, you too, Brian. Take care. When we come back, we continue our evaluation of the Jets forwards at the 20-game mark. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of the Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Saturday morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day. It's a game day between the Jets and the Lightning, 3 o'clock this afternoon here on TSN Radio. We got all day coverage right after us. It's going to be Huss and Rick in the afternoon ride, guys. I guess no longer the brunch with Hustler like it was last weekend. So it's going to be the afternoon ride, guys, immediately after us. And then Kevin O, and he brings his energy and joie de vivre to the program starting at 2 o'clock. And
Kevin O is a bon vivant.
He is a bon vivant. He's a Renaissance man. He's a man about town. He's classy. Sorry, he wears those bright pink shoes or whatever. He's
well dressed, handsome,
exactly,
loquacious.
Oh, loquacious, even very good there, Ezzy. Let's continue our evaluation of the Winnipeg Jets forwards at the 20-game mark. We left off with Andrew Kopp. Let's move on to Matthew Perreault, who's also played all 20 games for the Jets this season. He's got 4 goals. He's got 2 assists. He's got 6 points in those 20 games. Is Matthew Perreault meeting your expectations? Is he below your expectations, or is he above your expectations so far this season?
Yeah, I'll start off, Dave. I mean, I think Matty Perreault has met my expectations. A really versatile player. We know that. He's kind of filling that Michael Frolik that he played, 4 or 5 years ago when he was a member of the Jets, that Swiss Army type of player, right? Swiss Army knife type of player. So, I mean, obviously the point totals haven't been there. And, you know, that's something that, you know, everybody likes to look at. But Perreault is a guy that we know the coaching staff of the Jets can always depend on, you know, whether they need to put him out there in a top six role. You know, he's obviously now, you know, more of a bottom six player at this point in his career. But, you know, I think those offensive totals will come. And you mentioned he's played all 20 games. That's big, guys, because since Perreault has come over to the Jets, since they brought him over and signed him in the summer, I mean, he's a guy that has missed, you know, what, 15, 20 games, Dave? He's kind of averaged missing. So I think the fact that he has stayed healthy in a season in which the Jets have had a litany of injuries, I think is huge. So I'm going to give him, you know, meeting expectations, because I think, you know, you know what you're going to get out of Matty Perreault on a nightly basis.
Yeah, and I also think he's met my expectations as well. I mean, the problem for Perreault is that it's what opportunity are you being given, right? Mm-hmm. And so he's working with what he really has in front of him, to my mind. So, again, shooting percentage, just look at that occasionally. It's a little bit below his usual average, not as significant, only a couple points below it. But, I think Matthew Perreault is just he's a bit of a luxury for this Jets team,
yep.
I think, especially, you know, coming in at that salary. And I think it's an opportunity, you know, he's one of those players that if you give him the opportunity, to Ezzy's point, he'll take whatever he's given and put in front of him. And he's a guy who just adds benefit to line. So he's met my expectations to this point.
Adam Lowry has played 18 of the Jets games so far this season. He's got 2 goals, 1 assist. We remember when he got that goal into the empty net last week, you know, finally getting off the schneid. Those 3 points sort of don't tell the full story, of course, of what you're getting from Adam Lowry. So what would you say, Dave, for Adam Lowry? Matching your expectations, below your expectations, or above your expectations through his first 18 games of the season?
You know, it's kind of in between met and a little bit below. I mean, he had 12 goals, 11 assists last season. He's got 2-1 this year. But when you look at the numbers, to your point, Drew, it doesn't take into account the fact that he had Mark Letestu and Gabriel Bork on his line for quite a while at the beginning of the season, and that was like a vacuum, a black hole of really achieving anything. So to me, you know, Adam Lowry isn't having the season you would expect him to kind of be in that 15 goal range traditionally, and you know, somewhere similar in terms of points in assists, sorry, but you know, so in terms of points, he's definitely having a down season, but. Again, he was asked to do quite a bit early on in the season, so I'd say he's met my expectations, but well, met to
no fence sitting. Give me an answer.
It's below my expectations.
Below your expectations.
Yeah, you know what? You know, Adam Lowry is in the same group as Andrew Kopp. I mean, we've really trumpeted him over the years, and you got to go minus one though. I mean, 2 goals, 3 points after 20 games. Mm-hmm. It's not just about those point totals, because as you mentioned, Dave, I mean, when he was playing with Gabriel Bork and Mark Letestu, you know, all due respect to those players, they're not talented players. You expected him to play with players like Andrew Kopp and Matty Perreault, who he's playing with now, right? Mm-hmm. So obviously, if he was playing with Kopp and Perreault the whole year, he'd probably have 4 or 5 more points, and maybe we're saying he met expectations, but you know, he's a guy that obviously provides the physical presence, great in the faceoff circle. I think he was 60% in the game against Florida. You always expect him to be, you know, around 50 to 60%, right?
He's at 58.1% in the faceoff circle.
Yeah, which puts him, you know, at the top of the league, right? So, and he's really improved that over the years. So, you know, Lowry, there are things that don't necessarily show up when you talk about goals and assists, because he's a guy that goes out there on the penalty kill, and he's a leader on this team now. You know, I mean, he's, what, 26 years old at this point? It's hard to believe, but, you know, Lowry is a veteran on this team and has been for quite some time. So I got to go minus one, Drew, just because, you know, not only is he not scoring, but he's not getting the shots either. I mean, you're not seeing him generate enough offense, and that's going to come. Doesn't mean he's not a great player, because he is. I mean, he's a great third-line player for this Jets team. But, you know, based on 20 games, based on that small sample size, maybe isn't as small as some people would say, but you got to give him a minus one. And I hate to say that, because he is one of my favorite Jets.
Gabriel Bork has played 16 games for the Jets this season. He was a free agent signing by the team. 1 goal, 2 assists for 3 points as well for Bork. How would you evaluate his season?
Let me go first. I mean, Gabriel Bork, I'm going to say met expectations, just because, I mean, we didn't expect him to score a lot of goals and get a lot of assists. We expected him to come in, play on the fourth line. That is, if he was going to play. We weren't even sure, you know, if maybe he was going to be that 13th forward, right, Dave? So, I mean, he's come in, he's played on the penalty kill. As you mentioned, he's injured right now. But, I mean, I think we're getting exactly what, you know, I think his physical presence has maybe surprised me a little bit. He's a scrappy player. I mean, he's a guy that gets into the corners, and he's a guy that'll lay some body checks, and he'll be an effective checker. So, I'm going to say met expectations, because I just don't think they were that high.
What happens if you didn't have any expectations for Gabriel Bork?
Well, then you would say he probably met them, or he succeeded them, because it's hard to be disappointed when you have none.
No, I mean, I would say he's met. I didn't have particularly high expectations. He's a guy who was talked about as a guy who could be on your penalty kill, although he wasn't on the penalty kill as much as you'd expect for a guy who was brought on to be kind of that PK guy potentially, and, you know, with Brandon Tanev's absence. But, yeah, I mean, he's I guess met the. I didn't have high expectations for Gabriel Bork, so I think he's done what you kind of expect a veteran player. You know, he's played almost 400 NHL games to do.
The last Jets forward, to have played double digits this season is their current fourth line center and rookie David Gustafson. How would you evaluate his performance? I mean, nobody really expected him to make the team necessarily out of training camp. Here he is. He's almost become a bit of a stalwart on that fourth line for the Winnipeg Jets right now, playing with, you know, guys like Yuna Luoto and Logan Shaw, two other guys who he didn't really necessarily expect to be on the team.
Yeah, and I mean, it's easy to look at his stat sheet and say he's got no points in 13 games, but how much is he playing? 5 minutes a game, 7 minutes a game? Mm-hmm. And we didn't expect him to make the team, right? So I can't say it's minus one. He's not meeting my expectations, because I didn't think, quite frankly, he was even going to be in North America, right? We thought maybe he'd play for the Moose, but it was a surprise that he made the team. And obviously he was a healthy scratch earlier in the season, but, you know, he's got some good size. He's got some good hockey smarts. And, you know, I think the fact that he's in the NHL right now at, you know, what is he, 19, 20 years old? He can't be older than 20, because he was just drafted 2 years ago in the second round, right? Right. So there you go. He's a teenager. And I think, you know, you'd expect him to play a little bit more. But as Mike McIntyre mentioned, you know, last hour, the Jets are basically running three lines right now and not really playing that fourth line that much. So I got to go met expectations, because I just didn't really have that many expectations for him, because I didn't expect him to be on this team.
I would say based on what he's been allotted, he's exceeded my expectations because I've been so impressed with how smart a player he is. And I mean, we knew that, but it's one thing to hear reports. When you don't watch a player on a nightly basis, it's a lot different, right? So you can hear people talk about a guy, but until you've seen him, until you've watched him, and again, so much happens in the game that you're not seeing on television, and you want to be able to watch what that guy does away from the puck as much as he's doing with the puck. And I've been really impressed with David Gustafson. I think he's, you know, again, you know, to Ezzie's point, you know, it's a results business. You want to have goals, you want to have assists, but again, you know, 5 minutes here, 8 minutes there. It's tough to really generate a lot when you're not getting that opportunity. But I think he's exceeded what I've expected of him so far this year.
Apologies to the Jets forwards we didn't get to, but they haven't played enough games to qualify at the double-digit mark. When you look at your cumulative rankings of the Jets forwards, Dave, you have a plus one for Gustafson and Ehlers. You have minus ones for Wheeler and Lowry. Ezzie, you have plus ones for Laine and Ehlers and minus ones for Wheeler and Lowry. Grand total, add it all up, subtract the negatives, it's a big fat zero in terms of expectations. So the Jets are really right where you expected them to be.
Even Steven.
When we come back, O-Dog, Jeff O'Neill is going to join us, our buddy from TSN 1050 in Toronto. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live as part of Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.